Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering the SMU Certificate Program, where you can take courses in art, architecture, history, literature, and more. Registration online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. There are four active teenagers in my house, and let me just tell you, those kids can eat. They're actually pretty good about eating fruits and veggies, which is great. But sometimes at the grocery store, when, say, two pyramids of apples sit side by side, one conventionally grown and one organic, and the organic ones are half again as expensive, I feel a little conflicted. I wouldn't be able to tell by looking which is which, so are the organic ones definitely better? And if I choose the cheaper fruit, when the organic stuff wouldn't technically break the bank, am I somehow gambling my family's health or their environment? Journalist Dina Shanker is here to tell us what she has learned about the differences. She reports about food and consumer goods for Quartz. Her article, Buying Organic Veggies at the Supermarket is a Waste of Money, was published August 29th. Dina, welcome to Think.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, well, your headline is a bit of a spoiler alert, but we will go into why you concluded what you concluded. I want to start with this. What does it mean when a fruit or a vegetable is certified organic in the first place?
So what that means is that it's complying with the regulations set out by the USDA under the National Organic Program. So those, when it comes to produce, those regulations largely concern what farmers are putting into the land. So that includes largely pesticides and fertilizers.
How does the checkout price of organic produce compare with the price of the same foods grown conventionally? Is it more expensive everywhere as it is here in North Texas?
Well, I'm sure anyone who's been at the supermarket knows that 9 times out of 10, approximately or so, the organic food is going to be more expensive. Different analyses find different price differences. So Consumer Reports found that the organic food that they looked at was 47% more expensive on average. That can range. USDA has numbers that show, for example, mesclun greens in San Francisco in 2013, they were only 23% more expensive, but the organic carrots were about 3 times as much as the conventional ones.
So does organic cost a lot more to produce?
So organic does not necessarily cost more to produce. The price difference is largely because of a markup that farmers are able to put on their organic produce because people will pay for it. Now, one thing that's really important to keep in mind before people get mad at farmers is that it takes 3 years of organic practices before you can be certified organic. So that's 3 years of doing something without getting paid for it. So, you know, when they mark up their produce a lot, part of that is most likely to cover the cost of those 3 years.
But and when you say
they are more expensive
without getting paid for it, they could sell it as conventional, even though they've been building up to organic certification for those 3 years, but they don't get organic prices during that time.
That's right, because they don't have the certification yet.
Okay, so let's talk about the impact of organic farming on the environment. This one is a little complicated, but organic certification does not guarantee that food is pesticide-free or fertilizer-free.
That's true. Now, for the most part, organic farmers are supposed to steer clear of synthetic pesticides and fertilizers, but even that isn't true all of the time. There are some synthetic pesticides and fertilizers that are allowed to be used under the National Organic Program.
I think most people understand where organic fertilizer comes from, but what kinds of pesticides are used by organic farmers if they're not artificial?
They're often derived from different plants and sometimes even insects and elements, you know, things that have natural origin.
Do organic pesticides leave less residue on produce than synthetic ones?
It's really hard to make an overarching conclusion about that because the truth is that there are a lot of different pesticides that are available to be used and they work differently with the different produce that's being grown. So there have been analyses by the USDA that actually found higher residue levels on organic lettuce than on the conventional lettuce. So it's just hard to make any kind of overarching statement, which is part of why I say that it's not necessarily, probably not worth the money that you're spending if that's why you're spending it.
I'm curious about the move for large corporate farms to gain organic certification, because in my mind, to be honest, when I think of an organic farm, I think of this place where, you know, the sun is rising up over the red barn and there's some cows wandering in the pasture and chickens and then there's some crops. There are factory farm operations now growing organic produce.
There are, and I mean, that's how Walmart can carry organic produce. A farmer that is operating a very small operation can't produce enough lettuce or potatoes to supply to these giant stores.
Are the yields very different when organic methods are used?
Yields are generally lower for organic methods, yes.
All right. You found a study that demonstrated organic farming can release more greenhouse gases than conventional farming. How would that happen?
So that was a really interesting study. And basically what it found was that these very large factory farms that are growing organic food are emitting more greenhouse gases, largely because of a combination between, you know, the heavy machinery that is required to operate these huge operations combined with the lower yields. And, you know, it's really interesting because a lot of this can vary so much depending on the vegetable. So, for example, tomatoes emitted 30% more greenhouse gases when they were organic than when they were conventional. But that's not going to be true for every single piece of produce.
So it's just hard to make a sweeping statement.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And you can't really tell by just looking at a piece of produce at the supermarket what kind of practices went into it.
This doesn't come up in the piece, Dina, but I wonder if you've looked at all into how we began to believe that organic was the best way to do things.
I have not formally researched that question, but I do know that organic started as a much smaller movement among farmers, returning to the kinds of practices that were the main farming practices, say 100 years ago or so. And it was the fact that these farmers were so successful in terms of attracting customers that bigger operations said, hey, we should get in on this too.
Do organic farming practices result in more healthful food, stuff with more vitamins and minerals?
So this is a really interesting question. The most recent meta-analysis that looked at more than 300 studies found higher antioxidant levels and lower cadmium levels in organic foods. But that comes with a big caveat. First of all, it's really hard, once again, to make these overarching statements that organic food has higher levels of nutrients because, you know, maybe one organic carrot is better than another non-organic carrot, but a very different organic carrot might not be. And really, these differences in nutrient levels are pretty small. And if you want more nutrients, if you want more of the beta carotene in the carrots, eat another carrot, whether it's conventional or organic.
Right. So it might just be the difference in a couple of bites worth of vegetables.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we know that not everybody can afford to pay the premium for organic everything, or maybe they just don't choose to. Sometimes these lists come out about the crops that are most likely to have pesticide residues. The idea being if you can only choose a couple of organic items, these are the ones that matter. What did you learn about that?
So what I learned was that scientists from the University of California published a report in 2011 where they looked at the fruits and vegetables on the Dirty Dozen list that the Environmental Working Group puts out each year. And they found that of those fruits and vegetables, the highest level of residue on them was less than 2% of the maximum allowable by the EPA. So what this means is that even the so-called dirtiest of the conventional produce really isn't that dirty.
Have we gotten better about that over time, or has this always been the case?
You know, I can't answer that. And I would say, though, that it, I'm sure, again, varies from vegetable to vegetable, and even vegetable to vegetable on the same farm. My guess is that people would be, that farmers don't want to unnecessarily treat their food. So the better science that comes out, the more they use it.
Is there any link between organic farming and labor protections? If I buy organic produce, does that guarantee I'm not a party to farm worker exploitation?
Unfortunately, there is not. The USDA certification has nothing to do with farm workers and how they're treated and what they get paid and what rights they have and all the other questions that we have about farm workers who are such an exploited population already.
So it may be true in some places, it may not be true in others, and the same is the case for conventional farming.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Is organic food somehow more sustainable than other food to the extent that farming methods contribute to things like soil and water conservation if you're doing it the organic way?
That's a really good question. The problem is, and I hate to keep repeating the same thing, is that it's just so hard to make a single overarching statement because we tend to think of organic as being sort of a monolithic industry, but it's really not. So there are going to be some organic farmers and some conventional farmers also who are doing everything they can to reduce the amount of water that they're using. I mean, if you look at what the farmers in California are doing in the drought, it's really amazing, and that has nothing to do with organic or not organic. So different farmers will use different practices, and I think for the most part, farmers want to do the best that they can. Not only is it good for the environment, but they don't want to spend unnecessary money. So they'd rather put less in than they have to.
I think it's really healthy to have my assumptions challenged in this way. But I have to say, Dina, you're making this much more complicated than just knowing by looking at a sticker that I'm doing the right thing.
Well, that's unfortunately the truth, not just when it comes to organic vegetables, but really all of our food. Every label leaves as many questions, I think, as it does answers.
Does organic farming require more land area? You mentioned lower yields earlier. Does it take up more space to grow things organically?
It definitely does, because, you know, the same square foot of land will produce less food if done organically. And, you know, in some places this can be a problem if there isn't enough land and they want to only use organic to grow food. But, yes, definitely organic food takes up more space.
Could most people tell the difference in taste between organic and conventional produce? Like if I sat down with two carrots, would I bite into one and say, this is where it's worth it to pay extra for organic?
So this is one of my favorite things, because the truth is that, again, organic is not going to make your vegetables taste better. I know we all want our vegetables to taste better, but organic is not the way to do it. It really depends a lot more on something like freshness and seasonality. So if you want the best asparagus, well, then eat asparagus when it's in season and nearby. And when it's not in season, eat something else, because there are a ton of vegetables out there.
We're speaking this hour with journalist Dina Shanker. She writes for Quartz, and her article, Buying Organic Veggies at the Supermarket is a Waste of Money, was published August 29th. If you'd like to join the conversation, maybe tell us why you do or do not choose organic, or if you want to ask a question, the telephone number is 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program. You can apply now for fall and design your own master's degree at SMU, a customizable evening master's degree for working professionals. More at smu.edu/MLS.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Dina Shanker. She's a journalist for Quartz and published an article on August 29th there about the pros and cons of buying organic vegetables and fruits, which tend to be more expensive than their conventionally grown counterparts. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org. Dina, you suggest that if we want to know what we're putting in our bodies, we should try to buy at local farmers markets. What kinds of questions do you ask when you get to one?
I usually ask if they use pesticides. Although I actually start with the question, are you organic? Because I think that's a really good starting point. And if they say no, I say, what are you doing that isn't organic practices? And they'll sometimes say, like, well, I do spray some pesticides. And I might ask them what kind, although I often don't recognize the names, to be totally honest. but it's just good. Honestly, it feels good to know that they know the names.
Yeah.
I'll ask them how often, things like that. And the one of the things that's great about a farmer's market is that if you're going to one nearby, you don't need to ask these questions every week. You start to build a relationship with the vendors. Although I have to say, I really wonder if they remember me because I remember them.
So you're not against buying organic produce. You just aren't convinced that it's always the best choice.
That's right. And, you know, I've spoken to friends that, and especially friends that are parents, and a lot of them feel like if they're not buying the organic vegetable, then they are doing something wrong for their family. And I really hate to hear that because it's expensive and not everybody can afford it. And not everybody should feel the need to spend three times as much on a piece of food if they don't need to.
I'm always harping on this, but it makes me crazy that there's a lot of processed food products that are organic and therefore they get this kind of seal of approval and they may not be any better for us than the other kind.
That's right. I mean, when it comes to processed foods, you know, it's a very different conversation. And organic really doesn't mean healthy. And when we talk about that in terms of vegetables, we're usually talking about sort of like nutrient levels or maybe contaminants. But when we're talking about processed foods, there are so many different ways that processed foods can be unhealthy. And organic really has nothing to do with most of those.
Let's go to the phones now. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. We have Marion on the line in Carrollton. Hi, Marion.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I was brought up as a vegan since infancy, and I can't actually taste the pesticides, and I cannot finish the fruit or vegetable I'm eating when I take that one bite and taste it. So I look for the foods that don't have that pesticide taste.
What does the pesticide taste like to you, Mary?
It tastes like metallic, something chemical.
Huh, that's really interesting. Thanks so much for your call.
Yeah.
I guess if people feel like they are tasting something, it would make sense to look for foods that don't contain any pesticides.
That's right, but organic foods do contain pesticides. And actually, one thing that's also really interesting that I learned while I was researching this story is that sometimes organic foods, by no fault of the farmer, do contain the pesticides that they're not supposed to, and that has to do with what's being farmed nearby. Hmm. So if you can taste the pesticides, you could very well possibly taste the same pesticides on organic food because they might be irrigated with water that has pesticide runoff from conventional farms, or they're very close by. So sometimes, it's not a guarantee that you're not going to get those pesticides either.
It is tough. If anyone has experience, you know, with a backyard garden, you can be growing these beautiful squashes or tomatoes or lettuce, and then you're just about to harvest, and then critters realize it's also the optimum time for this food to be eaten.
Yes. I don't personally have a garden, but I've definitely heard my mom talk about that.
All right. 800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We have Jared on the line now in Louisville. Hi, Jared.
Hi there. How are you doing today?
Great. Thanks.
Perfect. I have a question for the caller. So obviously you mentioned that the organic produce and products tend to be a bit more expensive than the non-organic. So if you're a college student or on a budget and you would like to eat organic, you might have to pick and choose which products you would like to consume organically. So are there any certain fruits or vegetables that tend to contain more pesticides or more harmful non-organic chemicals than others if you had to pick and choose?
Thanks,
which ones would probably be the most useful?
That's a really good question. In general, anything with a peel or a rind gets extra protection. So, you know, like an orange or a melon is less likely to pick up into the actual fruit, the pesticides. The other thing, though, that I just want to add is that you might be very surprised, I know I certainly have been, by how inexpensive organic and non-organic vegetables at the farmer's market can actually be. So if you're on a budget, I highly recommend signing up for a CSA. It's incredibly inexpensive. You'll probably end up with more food than you have room to use. And even an organic CSA will cost you, you know, an organic CSA could very well cost you less than buying conventional produce every day or every week at the supermarket. I strongly support CSAs, especially for economic reasons.
And a CSA is a deal by which you agree you're going to buy a certain amount of produce every week or every month, and then you don't exactly know what you're going to receive, but you get a certain amount of money's worth. Is that right?
Yeah, and there are a lot of different ways to do CSAs these days. So some CSAs will actually give you more choice about what you can get in it. Personally, I like the element of surprise. it's always a challenge to be like, what am I going to do with like 15 tomatoes? But the challenge is a good one. And really, you end up with a lot more food than you can use, and gives you a good way to share with your neighbors and make some friends.
And what you get with a CSA, I gather, is also only items that are in season.
That's exactly right.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next on the phone to Amanda calling from Dallas. Hey, Amanda.
Hello.
Hi. Go right ahead.
I was wondering, I don't know if this has been touched on yet, but whenever I buy organic, I'm not buying just because I think it's a cleaner food, but I'm buying it because I want to support the entire system to show, like, vote with my dollars and show that I and my family and people I care about want clean food. Was that ever touched on? It seems like we're kind of, you know, going towards the side that organic food really isn't that different, but it's not just about the food. It's about the entire system and what it supports.
Thanks for your call. What do you think about that, Tina?
I think that's a really good point, and we all want to support a system with better food. So the thing is, though, is that organic does not necessarily reflect that it's part of a better system. You know, Michael Pollan once said that if you let me pull up the exact quote because it was so good. He was talking about these big organic farms, and he said, they're organic by the letter, not organic in spirit. If most organic consumers went to those places, they would feel they were getting ripped off. Mm-hmm. And that really, unfortunately, means that you're not necessarily supporting the system that you think you are. And once again, and I'm sorry to keep repeating this, this is why farmers markets are such an excellent option, because you really get to see the system that you're supporting. And instead of paying into you know, another corporation that you really don't know much about, you can actually hand the dollars to somebody who had an actual part in growing and selling that food.
You've also written recently about Monsanto's move toward a goal that you call global vegetable domination,
That's right.
Of which starts with this kind of super broccoli that they have come up with.
That's right.
Tell us a little bit about that.
So Monsanto is now in the vegetable business, which a lot of people wouldn't realize because they think of Monsanto as the corn and soy company. And they're still that. They're very much still that. But now they're also in the process of developing and selling these sort of super vegetables and fruit. Now, these are not genetically modified, so they don't bring in any of the questions about GMOs. The way they're developed is by selective breeding, which people might remember learning about in like ninth grade biology, where scientists take two things with good traits, and they cross them to try to get all the good traits into one organism. But the way Monsanto does it is they have a lot of high-tech machinery, and they can do what used to take 100 years, they can do it in probably like 10. So they have developed, the example I really dove into was the Beneforte broccoli. And the Beneforte broccoli is has been demonstrated in multiple studies to be extra healthy because it produces three times as much of a phytonutrient that typical broccoli does, and our body turns that into a cancer-fighting compound. So when people talk about broccoli as being good for cancer, that's what they're talking about. And now Monsanto has a broccoli that will be even better for your health than anything you would currently find on a U.S. grocery shelf.
What's interesting is that this is not a GMO broccoli. It's been specially bred, but it has not been genetically modified.
That's right. That's right. The broccoli, and they have an onion that doesn't make you cry, a pepper that's smaller so that it creates less waste. They have sweeter melons, all sorts of products, and all of these have been developed with selective breeding and not genetic engineering.
It sounds like a sign that Monsanto's paying attention to the fact that consumers are saying they do not want genetically modified foods.
I think that's part of it. I also think that in addition to consumers saying they don't want genetically modified food, they also seem to be moving away from packaged junk food like, say, corn chips or candy, and moving towards more produce. So while sales of soda are down by unit, sales of produce are up. And Monsanto makes a lot of the corn and soy that ends up getting turned into these processed foods. And so, you know, if those trends continue, Monsanto's covering all of its bases.
Let's go back to the phones now. We have Ron on the line in Plano. Hey, Ron.
Hello.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
My question was, and it's interesting that you had just talked about the genetically modified foods. My experience has been with tomatoes that I've grown myself, either heirlooms or just regular seedling tomatoes, do not even remotely taste the same as the genetically modified, since they are basically bred for shelf life. The same way with other types of vegetables that are have been genetically modified. So that was my question. What was your study showing between the differences of the ones that have been genetically modified, basically by Monsanto, compared to the heirloom or the...
Have you looked into that, Dina?
Yeah, so... Actually, vegetables that you're buying at the supermarket are not genetically modified. Genetic modification really refers more to corn and soy, which go into processed foods. I don't think that there are any genetically modified vegetables that are currently on the shelves. There's a potato that was just approved, but you wouldn't find it in a supermarket yet. As far as tomatoes, though, that's a really interesting example because the thing about tomatoes, and this is true whether they're organic or conventional, if you see a tomato in the middle of winter in a supermarket in New York, as I have many times, that tomato is not fresh or in season. So tomatoes often get picked before they're even ripe, and then they're ripened along the way, and that's why they taste so bad. So that's a processing issue.
And some of them have come a very long way. When we buy out of season produce, it might have been grown overseas and spent a matter of weeks in transit.
That's right. Or very often they're from California, and wherever you are in the United States, chances are you'd be in a California vegetable, especially in the middle of winter.
All right, let's go back to the phones now. We have Bridget on the line in Dallas. Hey, Bridget.
Hi. My question is, aren't some of these pesticides systemic? I mean, I buy organic not because of the residue, but because it's taken up by the plant. Is that not true?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I totally understand the question. Are you saying
you're talking about pesticide residue.
So, Bridget, do you mean when pesticide is sprayed, then it gets into the soil and then it rains, and then as the plant takes in moisture through its roots, it will absorb the pesticide throughout the entire plant? Is that what you're talking about?
Exactly.
Ah, yes. Okay, well, yes, that can definitely happen. But that can actually happen in organic and conventional growing.
You did a piece recently, this is really interesting, about a government conspiracy against vegan mayonnaise. Can you talk about why some piece of the government would have something against vegan mayo?
So this is a really wild story. It mostly takes place at the American Egg Board, which is a USDA-overseen research and promotion organization for eggs. So like that motto, the incredible edible egg, mm-hmm. that came from the American Egg Board. So the American Egg Board, these recent emails have been disclosed, and they show that the American Egg Board was very worried about vegan mayonnaise, mostly from Hampton Creek. They make a product called Just Mayo. And there are emails that show first asking the president of the American Egg Board asking, what are we going to do about Hampton Creek? And then a series of emails over several years that show all the different things that the American Egg Board, sometimes at the advice of the USDA and other times with industry executives, and how they wanted to take on this company.
My guest is journalist Dina Shanker. She writes about food for Quartz, and on August 29th, she published a piece about buying organic veggies and whether it's worth the money. If you'd like to be part of our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or find me on Twitter. I'm at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program. You can apply now for fall and design your own master's degree at SMU, specializing in communications or organizational dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with journalist Dina Shanker. She writes for Quartz about food and other consumer issues. She wrote a piece called Buying Organic Veggies at the Supermarket is a Waste of Money that was published in Quartz August 29th. You can be part of our conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Just to be clear, Dina, the reason the American Egg Board cares about vegan mayo is that traditionally, although traditionally for me, mayonnaise is something that comes in a jar with a lid that you screw off, but traditionally it's made with oil and egg and some kind of acid like lemon juice or vinegar.
That is true. I would say that the reason the American Egg Board is concerned is because the product is marketed, promoted, sold, and used as an egg product replacement. So that's the concern, is that this is a board that promotes eggs, and they see now people saying, oh, well, you know, instead of that egg product, I'm going to try this plant-based mayonnaise. And that's, you know, directly opposed to their interests.
All right. We have a tweet here from Leah who says, dumb question. I don't think this is a dumb question, Leah. Can't you wash a lot of the pesticides off produce that you buy?
Yes, you can, although my understanding is that not all of the pesticides come off, but you can wash a lot of them off, and it's really not a reason to worry.
Did you go into this exploration knowing what you'd find, or were you surprised by some of the conclusions you reached?
both. I've been reporting on food for a little while now, and so some of this I've known for a while. There were definitely other things, though, that when I saw them, I was surprised. For example, certain organic pesticides being highly toxic, which I just didn't know. I knew that they weren't necessarily better.
The taste thing takes me by surprise, and I think maybe. Do you think we sit down and we think I've paid 50% more for whatever, this tomato, and therefore it tastes more delicious? Do you think that we get convinced that it tastes better because we've paid more for it?
We definitely want it to taste better. There's no question about that. Taste is so subjective that... me and you could split a carrot, and you could think it's a great carrot, and I could say, eh. So it's really impossible to make any big conclusions about taste, except that there's no guarantees.
And, of course, we could buy the same carrot from the same – well, different carrots, but from the same farm, after different seasons, and they could taste different because of sun and rain and that sort of thing.
That's exactly right. And they could have different levels of pesticides just because of the different seasons.
800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next on the phone. Actually, we will go to another question via email here, and this one comes from Kat, who says, chemical fertilizers use enormous quantities of energy to produce. Runoff gets in our water and creates huge dead zones in oceans and waterways. Pesticides kill a lot of beneficial insects. And it can also kill the fungi that many plants and trees depend on for root health. Is that something we should think about sort of beyond sort of the local effect of eating the stuff, the effect of pesticides, chemical pesticides on the landscape?
I mean, we should definitely think about that. Chemical pesticides can definitely be toxic to waterways, to the farm workers that are inhaling a lot more than we are. The problem is just that, once again, it's so hard to make these big overarching statements about one conventional versus organic. There are going to be some organic pesticides that you put head to head with conventional pesticides, and the organic ones look worse. And they might say be less toxic, but because they're less toxic, the farmer then has to apply many times more of it. So it's just really hard. And what the best you can do is talk to your farmer and make sure he's using responsible management practices. That can mean a lot of different things and varies depending on what's being grown, where, and when.
Another thing that you looked into recently, we'll probably have borderline vegetarians running from meat altogether. What did you find about the ground beef industry in North America?
The ground beef industry in North America. Ground beef, Consumer Reports recently did an analysis of ground beef from all kinds of different stores, from all kinds of different producers. So conventional, grass-fed, organic, big store, small natural food store, the whole gamut. And they had a lot of findings, but the one that really stuck out the most to me was that every single pound of that ground beef that they bought had evidence of or had fecal bacteria in it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that a factor of the way that it's produced? Is there something special about ground beef?
There is something special about ground beef, and that is that it is very processed. It passes through many, many steps in order to land at the supermarket already in that packaging. So it's hard to say where the fecal bacteria got into the meat, or even if it's what kind of body it came out of. Is it a processor that didn't wash their hands after they went to the bathroom? Is it there was feces on the outside of a carcass and it didn't get cleaned well enough and made its way into the meat? We don't know that. But the less processing anything has gone through, the less likely it's going to be to end up with things that you didn't expect in it, including fecal bacteria. So if you want to make a burger, buy the beef whole in a chunk and then grind it yourself. You will save yourself a lot of the steps along the way that go into grinding beef.
All right, let's move on to something a little bit less gross. you took a look at the paleo diet, which lots of people swear by, that we ought to be eating like our early human ancestors. Is there science to support that?
Well, the paleo diet, you know, number one is it comes in a lot of different forms, and it's interesting if you try looking up an answer to a paleo question online, you'll get like 13 different views. But one of the things that they is stressed by the paleo diet is protein over carbs. And there was recently a study that looked at the early ancestors of humans and whether or not they were eating root vegetables, like you know, ancestors of potatoes, basically. Mm-hmm. And they found a lot of evidence that showed that these people were in fact eating plenty of those. That this was actually my favorite part of the study, was that they believe that the women were digging these up out of the ground, foraging for them, and that the women provided a lot of the nutrition for their clans this way, especially for other women that were, say, pregnant or nursing. And that meat, that the men would go out hunting, but it took so much more energy for the men to bring back some meat than it took for the women to just, you know, dig up some root vegetables, that they were probably getting more calories from carbs than they were from meat. And I just love the idea of these, like, men coming back with, like, a, you know, some ancient deer or something strapped over their shoulder, like, you know, heroes after, like, a week of hunting. And the women sitting there in the cave, like, we've been eating potatoes, we're fine.
We've got enough calories. So we've always craved carbs, is what you've discovered.
That seems to be the case.
Something that maybe seems like the opposite of eating really well is sort of eating on the go. And you found that we can eat more than we intend to and not even really realize we've eaten very much at all.
That's true. And one is, I am guilty of eating my breakfast while I walk to work, although I haven't done it since I read that study. Basically, what the researchers found is that they took three groups of people. They had one that was eating a cereal bar while they were talking to someone else, one eating a cereal bar while they were walking up and down a hallway, and one eating a cereal bar while watching 5 minutes of Friends. And they found that when they took these groups and they put the individuals in like a what they called a taste test room, where they could they had some snacks in front of them, that the ones that ate while they were walking ate more. So the idea being that if you eat while you're walking, you're more likely to eat more later, no matter what it was that you ate when you were walking.
It kind of explains the Texas State Fair.
I haven't been to the Texas State Fair. That sounds like fun.
There's a lot of mobile food consumption.
I'm from Orange County, New York, and we have an Orange County State Fair, and there's a lot of mobile food consumption there, too.
Yeah.
So
it's okay once a year, right?
You know, everything's okay in moderation.
I want to know if having this beat has affected your thinking about food. On the one hand, it's something we worry a whole lot about. On the other hand, it seems like sometimes, maybe without meaning to, we're worried about the wrong things.
It has definitely affected the way I eat, and I like to think it affects the way the people around me eat, too, although I try not to be too obnoxious about it. You know, one thing I've learned is that all we can do is our best. So forgive ourselves for, you know, not always making the best choices. And that means whether it's deciding to eat a piece of fish that you know didn't come from anywhere nearby, but it looks really good, or, you know, eating a burger at a restaurant, even though you know there was probably fecal bacteria in it. We can't all be perfect all the time, and I think if we can just do our best, we'll be ahead of the pack.
Do you think that people, in making choices about their food, I mean, in some ways it's a real luxury to be able to think, you know, do I get 5% more vitamin A in this carrot than that one or something? Do you think that the idea of like food as medicine will take hold in America? And is it valid? You know, if we're looking again at Monsanto's special Beneforte broccoli having, you know, antioxidants and cancer fighters and whatever, is that misplaced, that excitement about these kinds of foods and what they can do for us?
Well, I'll start by saying I'm not a doctor, mm-hmm. but I think the best thing we can do is we can remember that our health is largely determined by what we put in our bodies, and that it's one of the biggest ways we can control our own health. So we should definitely pay attention to it. Now, do you need to buy a designer broccoli? No. Regular broccoli is incredibly healthy. It's one of the healthiest things you can eat. So don't ever feel bad about eating any kind of broccoli, whether it's fresh or frozen or organic or conventional or you know, Monsanto or anything else. Broccoli is good for you. And the best we can do is eat whole foods. The less processed food, the better. And that's honestly harder than it sounds when you first make the change yeah. away from processed foods. But once you kind of get used to it, it becomes easy. You know, making a bean salad is easier than making like a carnitas burrito.
All right. I want to talk to you about one more thing. This is really fascinating. You recently explored floating farms and how these things are sort of taking off. What is a floating farm?
So right now it's just theoretical, unfortunately, but a design firm has proposed this massive floating farm design that would be multi-leveled. It could dock pretty much off any major city, and it would be able to produce large quantities of food in very low environmentally impacting ways. The bottom floor is the fish farm. The second floor is the hydroponics level, where they would grow lots of produce. And then the top floor has a photovoltaic energy facility where they can turn solar power into energy to power their own operations.
Wow. It sounds amazing. It sounds expensive, but it sounds amazing.
It does sound both amazing and very expensive. I hope they build it and invite me to come take a look.
Do they have actual investors who are looking at a prototype, or are they still just in the design phase?
I believe they have some investors, but honestly, I'm not the right person to ask about that.
All right, we'll keep an eye out for that. Journalist Dina Shanker reports about food and consumer goods for Quartz. Her article, Buying Organic Veggies at the Supermarket is a Waste of Money, was published August 29th. Dina, thank you so much for making this time for us.
Thank you.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered today by Alan Roberts. Lindsay Connect is associate producer with help on the phones today from Natalie Kalman-Kuhn. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington. You can find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think. The show's email address is think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.